So first off, I'm going to try to get a hold of Brent Adams of the Day and Night Storage. I guess it's now called Footbridge Services. He has not been particularly responsive, and he said he's not doing interviews for the last month or more when I've tried to reach him. But I did get a hold of him recently, and he said it might be up for a chat this afternoon. But he reminded me he has videos online under his Homeless Outside in Santa Cruz Facebook page. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play a bit of his analysis of the outdoor living ordinance. Where are we going from here? Since that's really a primary topic that I've been talking about, and there's been a lot of talk about in the community for the last couple of shows and for the last couple of weeks at least. And I'm going to interject my comments occasionally, perhaps, who knows, too frequently in Brent's audio. You can always go to his Facebook page and hear it uninterrupted. But let's begin and listen to it and see what value can be drawn from it and what criticisms you're going to hear that I have about it. Here we go.
Well, here we are a few days after the second city council meeting about the outdoor living ordinance. We saw some protest movement action, and there's been a community of protests building up. You've got the classic homeless protest activist tendency playing out. It's good, bad, and ugly. There's a lot of really good things happening in that space, community building. It's our collective challenge of homelessness. But what we really do is enter these spaces frustrated about the city government, frustrated that a government would want to make it illegal to sleep outside. How dare they? How could they do that? Right? Of course. At the same time, what's been happening in this space all along? For decades, we had been criminalizing homelessness in Santa Cruz. I personally protested, marched on City Hall, marched downtown, yelled at City Council dozens and dozens of times to the point where they still have PTSD about me. They don't really want to work with our nonprofit. I do the Warming Center program, Footbridge Services Center, storage, laundry, showers, electrical charging out at Felker Street, and serving this population of people who sleep outside. In 2016, Martin versus Boise suspended all of the anti-homeless laws all over the country. If you can't shelter them, then you can't criminalize them. You can't write citations. And this new police chief, Andy Mills, agreed with that. We're not going to write citations. Right away, this encampment in the Benchlands popped up. We really got to see what happened because I was there every single day. In fact, you can look at this Facebook page, Homeless Outside in Santa Cruz, and look through the photographs of Benchlands, San Lorenzo Park, back from that time, and lots of videos.
A comment here. Mills did come to town about the time of the Martin versus Boise decision, a little bit before, actually, that the final decision came out. And he and his police officers essentially shut down the protest at City Hall, known as the Freedom Sleepers, that later became the Survival Sleepers after the armory closed down with no shelter throughout the late spring and early summer. And people who were disabled and elderly and just homeless folks generally clustered around City Hall and slept there until they were driven out by, in spite of the Martin versus Boise penumbra, if you will, the shadow of it. It hadn't yet reached the point of the actual decision by that federal court in Boise, but there had been an earlier decision, Bell versus Boise, which was essentially the same case. And Chief Mills, the new chief, taking over from Chief Vogel, who is more outspokenly reactionary on this issue, aside from being kind of a nice guy when he was not the police chief, which is kind of ironic, or it's not really ironic at all. It actually shows you what power does to people. But in any case, Mills was using other ordinances, and that's not something that is mentioned here by Brent. And he used those ordinances to crush the protests that happened at the City Hall. It had been going on for 2.5 years, and people then began to show up instead at the post office and camp on the sidewalk there or camp next to Laurel Street Park and other places. There were visible. And more people began to camp. And it wasn't just because of the courts. I think it had to do with economic conditions in the country and the outrageous rents in the city and other West Coast towns up and down. So that being the case, hepatitis epidemic in San Diego, I think, made authorities nervous. And Mills and his men began directing people to go to the benchlands and San Lorenzo Park. That is sort of my understanding of what happened. Somewhat different, not entirely, but, you know, it's a different, at least it puts a different focus or a different kind of, it's a different aspect to it. Here's more of Brent.
See kind of what went down. When people come together in these ways, they're no longer criminalized. They can hang out and build encampments together without any guidance, without any community agreement, without any community involvement whatsoever. What ends up happening in this space? Well, unfortunately, the lowest common denominators, as I'll state, begin to determine the vibe, what's happening in this space. Sometimes the most aggressive, coercive behaviors dominate what's happening in this space. It lacks peacefulness, it lacks safety, substance use disorder, mental health, and then people trying to procure these addictive substances that they need. How do people with no money get heroin and methamphetamine? What happens when you have a community of a space where that's mostly happening? You get a lot of theft, you get a lot of coercion, a lot of aggressive behaviors in that space. Does it play out? I'm not blanking that over the whole population of homelessness, but that's what we saw in the benchlands in 2000.
That is what he's emphasizing as essentially defining the benchlands for him. Now, he's, to be candid and full disclosure, visited the benchlands far more frequently than I did. And he had a similar criticism of the Phoenix camp that happened the next year or thereafter. He regarded it fundamentally as an influx of drug dealers into Santa Cruz, which is the same narrative that Take Back Santa Cruz and other right-wing neighborhood groups have, which I think really misrepresents if you regard it as the broad picture of what's going on. It's certainly an aspect to it, and it's no fun for people who are trying to get off drugs. It's no fun for people who are afraid of the sight of people using drugs. It's no fun to deal with petty theft in your neighborhood if that has been increasing. But throughout all this period of time, the statistics on theft and violence around these encampments, whether it's the Phoenix camp or the Benchlands, I never saw any good presentations by people who are concerned about these issues, Brent included, and he had access to public records too if he wanted to try to get them, or the police department, that would show that this was a huge upsurge. I think Brent may be concerned here with the quality of life for people in the camps, particularly for vulnerable people, and that's a commendable thing to be concerned about, whether we're talking about women or young folks or elderly or disabled people, people trying to come off of drugs. I mean, that's a matter of concern. But another concern is having survival encampments where people can actually get together and form some kind of connections with each other, even in the midst of different communities, some of whom use hard drugs. That's just a fact. And some of whom get sold hard drugs and buy hard drugs, just like they do in houses, except it's more visible. And it then becomes a basis for, of course, severe criticism and a pretext for not just shutting down that aspect of it if they can, but running everybody off and away. And that, of course, to me is what's really typically happens in not just this community, but in other communities and what's been happening in Santa Cruz. And in focusing simply on the drugs, I think you empower those forces. And that's what's concerned me about some of Brent's critique.
2017. The city kind of gave it some structure, porta potties, some fencing. They've made little lines in the ground, dumpsters. That was pretty commendable. We've never seen it before in the history of Santa Cruz, this sort of allowance of people to be in this space. The police would walk through every day, the rangers, and you can see videos of that on this page. What were they doing there? They weren't busting people for using. They were, and sometimes they were just making sure that people were still alive in their tent. There were several overdose deaths in that park. Finally, they had to clean the slate. They cleaned it three different times. People had to pack up their stuff, and they scraped the ground, allow people to recamp. They did it three different times. Finally, they were over it. And then they moved people into some people into a managed camp. It became very expensive managed camp, 1220 River Street. And they did that twice.
And again, Brent is focusing on the managed camp and the unmanaged camp. Of course, most of Santa Cruz was not in this condition at all. Most of those people were camping out elsewhere throughout the city, the Poganip and elsewhere, trying to survive and dealing with police, whether they were in their vehicles or in other places. And Brent's general perspective on this, and I think you may or may not hear this later in the video, but he said it at earlier times in some of the conversations we've had and played on this netcast, is that, you know, if people act responsibly and if they keep a low profile and if they don't alarm the horses and the neighbors and the children and don't shoot up, from the top of their vans, everything is okay. I don't think that's true. I think it may be true that by working with people in this way that Brent has done at Felker Street and the nearby campment in Felker Street and up in Harvey West, he's been able to create, the campers have been able to create a situation that is more positive. But the real pressure here is the fact that the city has no alternative but to allow something to happen because they face the potential of severe lawsuits, and they also face the reality that they're getting anger from people who are yowling about their property values and being shocked by rude comments from people who don't like being looked down upon, as homeless people are looked down upon and as is often commented on by people who are in much better circumstances than they are. So it's, that's my perspective. Let's hear a bit more of Brent's.
Finally, the Ross Camp, our facility was right there, so we really got to watch it grow. We gave those people blue tents, tarps, blankets, socks. We were really there to help people with their basic storage needs. But again, no value set, no community agreements, no real interaction from the community at large, just a space where people who sleep outside can begin to set up tents. Again, it became a bit of a buyer's club. The entire neighborhood was fleeced for its backyard furniture. I know that because our property, our facility had a lot of things taken. And so we were kind of watching cars drive up, procure the addictive substances that they need, and use them in their car. And we had on Felker Street, we had a really difficult time there. And watching people we know and love facing their addictions in that space. And the city, again, brought porta potties, dumpsters, fencing, tambark, and several overdose deaths occurred. And I'm just wondering, is this really, so we've been advocating for something called the transitional encampment, sanctuary camp, for many years. I've been up to Eugene and in Seattle myself four different times over the years to develop something like that for Santa Cruz and build a community around this beneficial idea. It's not a managed camp that costs $1 million. It's something that vastly empowers the people within and builds community around it. But we haven't seen that yet in Santa Cruz. So came time finally for them to scrape the earth, move everybody out of that place because the neighborhood was clamoring for it.
And here again, the notion that this is somehow required because you get a bigoted call for getting people to move where there's no place to move them to, and when you're not presenting any real documentary evidence of a crime problem, this is something that you can find if you look into the court record in the injunction granted against Martin Bernal and the city's attempt to move the camp on. It gives the lie to the, there's a sort of a quiet underlying narrative here that just I don't think is accurate and is a way of sort of pandering to the city's excuses and narratives, which Brent is doing, because I think, and I'm afraid it's true, he wants to get city officials on his side. He really does. He wants to get alliances with the community on his side, and he does this by thinking he can somehow treat the issues that are being exaggerated or that are being magnified and the against the survival issues of homeless people and the incredible lack of common sense and basic decency in terms of facilities and services that the city provides, which he comments on. But the answer is, and it's not a bad one that he has, which is to have agreement camps is a good idea. But the notion that at the same time you want to attack people who are protesting, and he isn't doing much of that in this video, the audio you're hearing about of the video here, but it is some, it is, you'll hear it afterward. He has a right to his perspective and to point out this, that the protests per se have not been able to move the city council to a reasonable position. It's taken protests, court action, it's hard for me to say exactly what has produced this current situation, but maybe you might say the economic conditions primarily too. That's what a good Marxist might say, and she might not be wrong about that.
Lots of things went down. Activists had a lawsuit that went on. There was an opportunity for transitional camp for a minute there, but the community of lefties activists that were a part of really just wanted to protest and kind of support that Ross camp. 1220 River Street, expensive manners camp, pops up again.
And the reason that that happened, that is the reason activists supported the Ross camp, when there was a hope of a progressive majority in city council before Drew Glover and Chris Krohn were recalled and Cummings ran the other way, was because that's where people were gathering. And at the same time, they were working on creating transitional encampments, too. That was one of the things that Drew Glover was trying to do before he was... In fact, that was one of the reasons he was expelled from the city council by the real estate interests money, backing up the bigotry of groups like Depot Park, Harvey West, West Side Neighbors, Next Door, you name it. So it's always seemed kind of strange to me that you attack, as you can hear essentially Brent doing here, or criticize, if you will, activists who are arguing for, you say, yeah, the Ross camp should stay in place until there's some other place for people to go, which seems to me sort of a no-brainer. And similarly with San Lorenzo, and the federal courts agree with that, mainly because of the COVID epidemic, admittedly. But still, it's still true whether there's a COVID epidemic or not. And for people who are concerned with serving homeless people in the most direct way that Brent is now doing and has been doing for some years, it's, who knows, perhaps it's a tribute to past experiences that Brent has had with other activists that have really embittered him on in this situation. Perhaps it's just his realistic assessment of how this practice has failed here in Santa Cruz. That's what he said. Again, the title to this whole audio is The Outdoor Living Ordinance, Where Are We Going From Here? So let's see if he gets into that.
And then finally, a year later, we have the Benchlands and we have the Felker Area Camp. That's the camp that I was able to have a lot to do with because they're right in our backyard. We didn't want the Coral Street effect to happen where homeless program just ignores the people camping. How do we work with them to remove their trash? How do we begin to build a value set? Well, pardon me. We hear a lot that it's police are confiscating people's survival gear, but that's not really, that used to happen quite a bit, but it's not happening as much now. What we were really seeing is homeless on homeless crime, people stealing each other's stuff, people going into each other's tents. And how do we reduce that? How do you start encouraging people to not take things from each other. People who are very desperate behave desperately. It reduces personal dignity. It brings the whole community of people who sleep down. We were seeing people coming into our facility over and over daily. People, I'd left my tent for a few minutes and people stole my phone immediately. Bikes were being stolen. So what we began to develop with the Felker Area Camp is this idea. Let's not steal things from each other. Let's make sure everybody has what they need. Let's not steal things from the neighborhood here. Let's realize that that we're all neighbors. How do we take care of each other to make sure that we're happy and healthy? So even though people were engaged in their substance use disorder, procurement of items to get their daily dose to try to get well every day, they're also working on their communities, taking care of each other. And we saw that play out. So the Felker Area Camps are vastly different than the Benchlands and the Ross Camp. Of course, they had to move that up because of river water rise. The Benchlands Camp.
Now, again, the claim that it's vastly different, the Benchlands and the Ross Camp are very, very different from the Felker Camp. I'd love to see some more documentation of this. I'm not saying it isn't necessarily true. It could well be. But assertion doesn't equal evidence, and I guess testimony from people who were there would be one way to present that. Have some kind of a forum about that that doesn't involve simply hostility on both sides. I don't know if that can happen, but you know, it's the fact that the police department is still confiscating materials. They are still not making them available except in very limited times during the week. I think it's a couple hours on Tuesday and I think 4 hours on Thursday or vice versa. I mean, it's outrageous if that, as far as that survival gear. And it probably is true that, and I think I have heard this, that a larger amount of the problem, at least in terms of actual immediate theft, is from folks who are just snatching, who are not in uniform and armed with guns, at least not in the way that police are.
Had grown again, exactly duplicating, but because of the pandemic, they had social distancing. But, you know, the same thing plays out and along the highway, too. They call it entrenchment, people just bringing stuff, building up. You know, you have, little castles built of pallets and big tarp kingdoms. I would be engaged in that too. If I was in that space, I would be kind of like feathering my own little fiefdom myself. I can see that. But where's the balance between having a sleeping ban where nobody can set up a tent and in a city park where people are just allowed to bring all kinds of material in, people are overdosing and there's no value set at all? And what are we now, during this moment of activism, defending? What is our vision forward? That people be.
Well, the problem with this argument is it's not really on an even playing field. If there were other places for people to go to do this, then you might not have people congregating in parks so much. If there were real open options, as some city council members initially talked about trying to get done before they were removed by the mob and their proposals were swamped by the mob of, you know, essentially well-organized right-wing, not-in-our-backyard NIMBYs who then elected the majority on city council that currently sits there. Not that it has really been that much different except for what appeared to be a brief moment in 2018 and early 2019. Which quickly got changed when it became clear that we had an Uncle Tom, Justin Cummings, on the council who was selling out renters, selling out homeless people, selling to developers, and buying the arguments of Cynthia Matthews and county apologists for sort of this ongoing do-nothing attitude and essentially leading us into the situation, well, continuing the situation that we've been in for years and watching it get worse. So the notion that there are two extremes, well, you can't just say there's a sleeping ban at one end and at the other end there's wild and crazy chaos. it's a nice appearance of a sort of a reasonable, let's find something in the middle argument. But in fact, there is no middle allowed. And because there's no middle allowed, you have to support people where they are. And that is something Brent has refused to do. Or at least if he's, that's one of the concerns I've had about his position. Because he's attacking activists who are trying to do that, which is support people who are sheltering in place. It's true that the Santa Cruz Union of the Homeless and Keith McHenry's Food Not Bombs and other groups are not spending a lot of time. Well, some people are, actually. Nomad and, I don't know, maybe even some people from Stop the Sweeps and some people from the People's Kitchen that's developed. I don't know exactly, but nobody speaks ill of Brent's management of what he does and his attempt to provide services, particularly storage services and shower services and electrical and, you know, even the occasional shelter services. But it's Brent who is bad-mouthing everybody else, blaming the activists instead of the people who are really in power. And his failure to do that, I say with the same kind of intensity, although occasionally it happens, makes one suspicious that he is looking to them for money and approval and acceptance, and that it speaks to a lack of integrity at that level, unless you really believe that he thinks there is sincerity in the city council and the board of supervisors and the staff of all of these organizations and the community organizations that are pushing to criminalize homeless people all over town. If you believe that they're sincere and that they're actually in the best interest of the homeless, which I don't think he thinks that. I can't see how he could think that. I guess the hope is that he has this idea that everything, if only people accepted the idea there would be some great agreement encampments and transitional encampments, that everything would be okay. And that might be true. But the real question is, how likely is that? And what about the real situation of real people on the ground right now? You defend them where they are. That's what I've said. And Brent, in a way, does. He provides services to those folks. That's a form of defense. But if you're also at the same time verbally attacking other people who are being critical of how the city is behaving towards them in terms of attempts to illegally criminalize them or unconstitutionally criminalize them, then it provokes a lot of confusion and concern.
They should be able to sleep anywhere they want to for as long as they want to with no real value set. Yes, we're also saying that mutual aid groups should be able to take care of this space. But we don't.
Now, who's saying people should be able to sleep as long as they want to with no controls or concerns at all? I think people are saying, yes, I have a right to fall asleep, but that's basically based on the fact that there's such a heavy pushback against people who are even trying to, you know, hide out and sleep. He is characterizing people as taking an extreme position when they're not, and so doing, I think he's doing a disservice, because I think both he and they and we need to be defended against much more powerful forces who have lethal force and a lot of financial resources and a massive support from people with property at their beck and call.
We don't really have a plan for that, and we haven't seen that in the last three or four years. So, you know, what are we really about? So I believe there's a vast amount of space that, and it's important to know where we've been and some vision forward. And no matter what the lay of the land is legally, we know that these governments are going to build another anti-camping ban again, because that's what they do. But we intervened in this space to help them build it out? When we build this resistance movement, we say, hell no, we're not moving from San Lorenzo Park, not grokking why they would want to do that. Is it anti-homelessness, or is it really a downtown gem of a park and lots of people have a need to use that park? And how can we develop other things differently? That's why we built this agreement camp out in Harvey West, based on some collective agreement. The agreements are, we don't steal things from each other. We see the neighborhood as our neighbors, and we want to be good neighbors. We don't trespass. We don't steal things from the neighborhood. We use responsibly in our space, in our tent. We take care of better care of each other. We deal with our poop and our syringes and our garbage. So people who agree to that, they've been over there for 4 months now without complaint. The city gave porta potties a dumpster, and there's a shower trailer over there now. So we want to build within the community, people sleep outside, this value set.
And again, the problem here, and it's good that all these things have happened over in the Harvey West and at Felker Street, and it's good that the city has provided some minimal services, I guess, to the Harvey West encampment for a small number of people, relatively small, 20 or 30, maybe 40 tents. Not sure how many are out there now. But the question remains for the main population in Santa Cruz, and the largest population, and it's not the only population, but the largest one, is San Lorenzo Park. And the issue, he's making various claims about people not being able to use the park because of the people there. And that, I think, remains to be substantiated. It's not that I'm saying this is a long-term solution, but if you're claiming there's an immediate need, as Martine Bernal insisted, in moving everybody out to nowhere because people are apprehensive and because the city is refusing to provide relevant and adequate services, doing this in the middle of winter in a COVID epidemic or pandemic is pretty hard to stomach and pretty hard to... If you, and also, it seems a little, frankly, a little dishonest when you're trying, or it's not quite the right word. It feels like that Brent, this argument is intended to persuade people to accept Brent's solution and to jump on board his bandwagon of, which I think is not a bad solution, but you don't falsify what's happening and demonize homeless people's behavior in the park. Unless you have specific evidence that that is really the case in a consistent and really a criminal way. And if you do, then you try to find solutions to that particular situation while retaining, since you can't seem to get either the city or the county authorities to name places where people can go and to provide them and provide services in spite of the rhetoric that we heard at both the supervisors and the city council meetings. You support them where they are. And maybe I'm missing... I mean, I have acknowledged that Brent is supporting people where they are by providing different facilities for them. Admittedly, he was, I think, more interested in moving people out of San Lorenzo Park over to Harvey West. I could be wrong about this. And Brent, you can correct me if I am wrong. But that's fine as long as there is an alternate place that people want to go to, that they can go to, and that they won't be harassed or get some security. But there is no real evidence that this place that Brent is urging people to move to will continue to be allowed. That's the problem. And the more you accentuate the poo-poo and feces and needles and crime and fears and children, the less likely you are to maintain those other, even the transitional and the agreement spaces that Brent talks about. You know, even though he is reassuring everybody that there is agreements not to steal, there is agreements to be engaged in private behaviors in private, all these agreements. And maybe, even if the people keep the agreements, one person who doesn't can become the flashpoint for eliminating the entire campground because of the kind of propaganda that Brent is implicitly agreeing to, that's generally being used to falsely characterize homeless people in these different places.
Around here, this is how we do it. We need an empowering community that's not just always only interested in resistance, that people enter the homeless space as activists and as lefties only to be, you know, encourage our anti-authoritarian, anti-state, anti-capitalist, anti-police value set and using the space of homelessness to do it. I was at the protest yesterday for a while.
And before he talks about that, and I did see Brent there briefly at the Tuesday protest, sure, I don't think one should only be concerned with resisting, and I think the people who are doing this resisting are also concerned with providing support for people and supporting alternate visions and so forth. Many people in Nomad are like that, the group that's concerned with assisting homeless people in RVs who are being threatened by police, or helping people move their stuff out of San Lorenzo during the period of time when it looked like they were going to be moved away by the police with their stuff seized and or destroyed. You know, the same police that Brent says aren't going to be doing that, or aren't doing that so much. They do it whenever they want. And then the threat of it happening can be just as brutal as the reality and just as oppressive. And that, I think, is my concern, too.
Well, were there very many people who sleep outside, or were there lots of new activists that we've never seen before, people on the microphone who've only entered this space within the last 6 months, right? And a lot of old seasoned activists along the sides, but really no people who sleep outside. That's not where this community is coming from. So we want to build something of value, regardless of whatever the city is doing. And there's
so here's Brent trying to discredit the people who called into city council by saying that they're a bunch of newcomers, or they're just these old hacks from old activists with old ideas who are part of this old resistance approach. But they aren't people from outside. First of all, it's hard for people from outside to do this kind of protest. And I've been around when Brent wasn't around years ago, when people did in great numbers come to city council who are from outside and demand changes and didn't get much, admittedly. But they got oppressed, slapped back. Ticketing continued. I wouldn't necessarily say it increased, but it was going at such a hefty rate. That I'm thinking of 1988, 89, 90, 91, 92, thereabouts, when the first Union of the Homeless formed here in 1992, and Huff formed in 1989, and there were other groups who were forming too. I think it's very relevant to look at the question of what people themselves, who are the oppressed people, want done. And insofar as Brent's local coalition for the homeless looks to do that, I commend him for doing that. But I think it's also possible for people who are housed to have a conscience on these issues too, and to express their rage and their concern. And that's always been my position. I don't claim to represent any homeless people at all, although people say I do, or they say I claim to when I don't. I have certain civil liberties concerns about people generally, and I think it particularly impacts people who are outside.
Some real spaces in here for transitional camps, for managed camps, for nonprofits to enter the space. We know that there's going to be lawsuits because of this Tolo situation, that whatever they're, we've already seen how ridiculous it's been designed, that people would be able to camp, on the golf greens in De La Viega. That's just crazy, right? That people would be able to set tents up in Moore Creek and break it down. If you've ever been in Moore Creek, you know how difficult it is to get out there and then to break camp and then move out. So now that they're saying in the light industrial areas, in the very minimal spaces, on sidewalks, it's just a non-starter. We need to intervene here as a set of solutionaries. I hate that term. People with ideas. Put people with ideas together with other people with ideas. Nonprofits, community groups, mutual aid groups.
And that's all true in a certain way. And his critique of the different proposals that the city council has been making, although they dovetail a bit with the NIMBYs and the Arena Gulch and so forth, who just don't want people there or anywhere, for that matter, if they're going to get them out of town, is my sense of it, but at least not in their neck of the woods. everybody can have great ideas. They can brainstorm wonderful things. But unless they have some power, the power to, and that comes from outrage, and that comes from those new groups of people, not just oppressed people outside who are, you know, being kicked around and have to hide out or making their private deals with the police and trying to make the, come to understandings with the neighborhood until one neighbor says, get out, and that's that will suddenly rule the situation. I do know what happened to Alicia Kuhl and her van and on Olive Street, and I was persuaded by the testimony of those who were suggesting that there was no problem, really, that it was the problem was an optical one that had to do with prejudice. And it's that underlying reality that I think is being downplayed and ignored by Brent, because and for the best of motives, he wants to see that change by giving the community and homeless people a chance to let it change through actual on-site behavioral success.
Really are there to benefit the community at large, not just at the expense of the neighborhood business. And you know, we see ourselves as set apart. We see the rhetoric as hateful of Santa Cruz. And historically, this is my reflection, that people who are in this protest set right now, they're often, and we've seen this over and over and over through the years, they're not invested in your community. Many of them are not from here, and they won't be here in a couple of years from now.
This is the outside agitator rhetoric used by Southern bigots when civil rights advocates came into their community. And there's a certain truth to it, even for Southern bigots. However, it's a lot harder for African Americans in the South in the 50s to organize than it was when people coming in and drawing national media attention to what was going on and creating an embarrassment for the Kennedy administration. He was the president at the time. And the Johnson administration until they had to do something. It's using an unfortunate, again, series of memes and narratives that breaks up the power that is going to be needed to change this and appeals to the good sense of the community when the community isn't showing good sense, but is rather responding to the lowest common denominator of fear and prejudice. You want to talk about lowest common denominators, which he does when he pulls out the drug use and the drug sales card.
Often, and we've seen this over and over and over through the years, they're not invested in your community. Many of them are not from here, and they won't be here in a couple of years from now. So, but they run the roost right now, and so we really like the fervor. But what has happened in the last few decades? What's really authentically happening now? And why and what responsibility had we in this space? And what responsibility do we have in building this future for the people that we say we care about? Or is it just, we're just using the space of homelessness for our own political fodder?
And here Brent is accusing activists of, you know, egoism, selfish motives, short-sightedness, sort of disregarding the real interests of the people who have a long-time stake in this because they're, whether poor or rich, homeless or housed, they are of this community, born here until they get kicked out by the police and the NIMBYs, of course, and then stay here. It's a consideration you have to think about. It's something to be wary of. But it's also true that these are kinds of things that happen when you try to mobilize power through a coalition of different groups. And you can talk all you want to about being reasonable and presenting reasonable plans and appealing to bringing in people who are very conservative to assist you, and thereby trying to tame the conservative beast, if you will, because I do regard it as a beast when it's a prejudice that bites off the the head, the hearts, and the life survival skills of people who are outside. In dividing people this way, in falsely providing hope that these conservative groups are going to change their minds without a real kick in the ass, is to me foolhardy. It is, although I don't like this argument when it's presented to me in other contexts, I like to see where it's worked in other places. Maybe I can see that, and I'm going to be trying to reach Brent after I've finished this conversation, and maybe he can talk about that a bit too.
Do we really care about the individuals who sleep outside? Have we been working with them? I know pretty much everybody who sleeps outside in Santa Cruz. I know them by name. Thousands of people we've served through our program, helping shelter them, at least giving them socks, blankets, hand warmers and stuff, and storage, laundry, showers, electrical charging, blah, blah, blah. We want to build transitional encampments. Yes, there's not going to be enough for the people who sleep outside now, but this is a filtration process. You need a space where people can have a safe space to begin to heal themselves. So many people come from already pre-existing middle-class backgrounds. Many of those people have families elsewhere. They just need a space where they can finally explore what sobriety looks like, build community together, help empower each other, help...
Now, here I'm catching the notion that sobriety is the issue for Brent. And it is the issue, I'm sure, for a number of people with alcohol and drug problems and other problems. But I don't think that's the main issue for people who are homeless outside. That's where we really have a difference of opinion. And Brent here is really in the category of a lot of folks who are interested in getting rid of homeless people from the town generally, or putting them into compulsory services of different kinds, because they believe that people are homeless because they're crazy, addicted, alcoholic. Crazy is, shorthand for mentally ill and need some help. You know, that kind of patronizing, we have the right to exert superior power over you because you just don't know what's good for you. When in fact, it's obvious that housing is needed and good for everybody, at least as an option. And that isn't, the fact that it's not being provided and it's not being referenced here is very relevant. I mean, and of course, one of the reasons that it isn't being referenced is they're not about to build it, so there's no point in even talking about it. So the only thing you can talk about are camping situations, which, yeah, it'd be nice to have better camping situations. Yeah, it'd be nice to have camping situations that don't alarm, some anxious neighbors. And it'd be better to have all kinds of things like decent facilities, even for campers or survival sleepers. But you're not going to get it by talking about it reasonably. That's pretty clear. The same way you're not going to get a change in police misconduct by talking reasonably to the police department. That's not how it happens. That's not how it happens.
Help each other, conform to those basic guidelines that we don't steal from each other. What's the term? Just hold each other to account so that we can raise this floor of experience to something clean, more safe, and dignifying for everybody. We need a shelter array. We need the community to enter the space not as protesters, but working with. We have this thing called the Santa Cruz Coalition on Homelessness. It's designed as an idea incubator to say, here's our collective challenge. How do we meet these challenges? Rather than always just saying, oh, the cops want to move on this camp, stop the sweeps. That's the only thing that keeps repeating. Stop the sweeps. Oh, here's our kitchen.
But unfortunately, the same argument can be used toward Brent. Some people might say of what he's saying, the only thing you say is, let's talk about transitional encampments. Oh, let's talk about agreeable encampments. That's what's going to move everything along. Stop criticizing the police. Stop supporting encampments that are under attack. Just talk about what you want to see in the future and how reasonable it would be. And that's all you need to do. And of course, that sounds as ridiculous as only doing supporting encampments. And I don't think people who support encampments as they exist now, because that's all they've got right now, are saying you shouldn't be doing the kind of things Brent is doing. They don't say that.
Here's a mutual aid group that brings a wagon in, and from time to time. That's not what homelessness services is. Let's look at holistically, and let's say we want to never turn anyone away. We want to meet all the basic needs and give people the chances that they need. We have, you know, 50, 60,000 people, residents of Santa Cruz, 250,000 people in the county, lefties. We really have a collective challenge that we've been neglecting, and we only let the protest cycle over and over every 2 years. And it's just not effective.
How a troglodyte city council, a barbaric city council, to trample over the basic needs of homeless people, all get together and say, let's look at this whole situation and consider all aspects of it the way we're doing, and then come and take some joint action, because that's really what needs to happen one way or another. But it's not a part of this presentation of the outdoor living ordinance. Where are we going from here? Because there's no even discussion of the outdoor living ordinance. He just sort of dismisses it. Now, maybe in a way that's sensible, rather than spend a lot of time going through it in detail as I've done. And that makes, in a certain way, a lot of sense. But unless you also attack those who are pushing this and the institutions that are pushing this with the same vehemence that you're attacking activists defending camps, you raise the suspicion that you're not really on the side of those people, even if you know them all by name, even if you have great plans for the future for them, even if you're out there every day helping them. That doesn't mean necessarily that you're going to get anywhere with what you're doing at a fundamental level, and it doesn't mean you're not hurting their chances by attacking their allies, at least their allies for being having the power to shelter in place.
Sure, there's going to be lawsuits. Sure, but where are we going to be? We're going to be in the same place again 2 years from now. And we're not, you know, are people going to be criminalized? Likely, yes, but not if we design our programs right and build a community of empowerment that the city and the county can finally work with. We don't give them the energy. We don't build a community that they to support them in reflecting back to us.
Now, do I hear correctly that we're just not giving the city council and the board of supervisors enough support? I just don't believe that. I mean, that to me sounds ridiculous.
A community that we want to see. We're a resistance movement, and they just respond in kind. We are a community of people who love Santa Cruz. We love each other. We love being here. We love the people who suffer sleeping outside. They're our people. It's not a grounds for protest. It's a grounds for healing and improvement, community building, and program building. We need a vision forward. We need to build a collective will towards action. So we're going to have a meeting, Coalition on Homelessness, Santa Cruz Coalition on Homelessness meeting, to talk about some of these ideas a week from Saturday. I don't know what date that is. And we'll talk about it soon.
And that was Brent Adams. Again, the Outdoor Living Ordinance, where are we going from here? And it doesn't sound like there's much specific about that that has anything to do with what the ordinance specifically says, other than I think he's right, that you're going to be in the same position in 2 years, if not worse. But I don't think that attacking other activists the way he is doing and the kinds of statements he's making about homeless people is necessarily helpful, unless you are also including real clear critique of the people in power and the institutions in power, because they have a lot more impact than a bunch of activists, frankly. That's unfortunately the reality at the moment. They have a huge budget. They've got lethal force. They have a structure of laws and courts. And they have, unfortunately, the subservience and agreement of the community, because the community has been conditioned into that state of affairs. But now I must apologize for going so long with no musical break. And here comes the break. Thank you.
since the virus arrived. A year since in this country half a million died. A year since all the borders were starting to be sealed. A year since the hospitals were sprouting in the fields. No question for anyone living around here, whatever else can be said. It's been a year. It's been a year since the cafes all closed. Since the dates on the calendars froze. As the windows turned to plywood, and the plywood turned to art, and unless you were essential or worked in a food cart, then you just had to cope with the anxiety and fear. It's been a year. It's been a year since the wheels in motion led to an uprising on every side of the ocean, whether exposed by the pandemic or by inequality, or 846 of the neck beneath the knee. A time of counter-demos, for a while a coup seemed near. I don't know what's coming next, but it's been a year. It's been a year since canceling the rent became a conversation as the last of the money was spent. A year since so many realized we are all vectors for the disease, and there most definitely is such a thing as society. Since the words mutual aid became ones you'll commonly hear, along with grim milestone. It's been a year. It's been a year. Been a year.
And that obviously was David Rovick's It's Been a Year.